Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Amy McGuire with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people all across the country. I'd like to acknowledge my elders past and present and the elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to our listeners if you tuned in across the nation via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And if you're listening on the web, 989fm.com.au, or on the podcast a little bit later, welcome to you as well. It's great to have your company this morning. Now, they often say that maths is the universe, the language of the universe, but obviously it's always been very Eurocentric and a Western viewpoint of the way we view mathematics. Dr. Chris Matthews is actually trying to change that perception, and he's trying to promote an Aboriginal viewpoint around mathematics. So he joins me today in the studio. How are you today, Chris?
I'm very good, thank you.
I'll just get you to speak right into the microphone.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Sorry, I should get a thing. Are you today?
I'm very good, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Can I start by asking your mob and your country?
I am from the Quandamooka people of Mindjiriba, which is Stradbroke Island over here in Moreton Bay.
So you spent a lot of your life around your traditional country over on Stradi?
I actually grew up in Toowoomba.
Oh, right.
So, and there's a whole story behind how my mum ended up there in Toowoomba.
Yeah.
Which, basically, there was the benevolent asylum on the island, which is when it shut down in 47. My grandfather, who was a plumber on there, got moved up to Toowoomba. But there was also family connections up there as well.
Yeah,
so that's
right.
One of the reasons that they went to Toowoomba instead of other places. But there was definitely a well-worn track between Toowoomba and Stradbroke Island when I grew up.
Yeah, right. I mean, you would have been able to. Did you get a good sense of your culture growing up in Toowoomba?
Yeah, I did. I had an interesting upbringing in that sense. What I mean by that is that Toowoomba, politely, is Pauline Hanson country. So I got both aspects pretty quickly in life, where you have come from a very proud community,
yeah,
know who you are, a lot of stuff about the island because you went there with the older people and stuff. But on the other hand, through your educational experiences, particularly at school I'm talking about, you experience the racism and the isolation and the other aspect of, or the way the other people perceive you. And as a kid growing up, that was sort of one of the greatest challenges really for me, is to actually negotiate these different perceptions of who you are. Because it didn't fit. I mean, one thing, your family is a strong, proud people. Another way, you're being devalued by these other people
that
are supposedly be in positions of people who are looking after your future and your careers and your education. But there was a certain level of devaluing which influenced my life very strongly.
And I mean, your expertise, I guess, is in mathematics, and a lot of young blackfellas growing up in a classroom, it might not be a subject that they automatically gravitate to because of the themes that you were just talking about Aboriginal kids being devalued, have low expectations. Was that something that you confronted when you wanted to, you know, choose your method of study?
I fell into maths in a lot of ways. I did have I did grow up with a interest in what people would call science. And I think that there's a connection there that I didn't really think too much about when I was a kid, but it sort of helped me gravitate towards that, because a lot of the education we got back on the island was about, you know, country and about plants, animals and all that sort of stuff. So there was a connection there for that in terms of sciences. But I think as a child growing up, you don't really realise that, but, you know, you're pulled towards that direction. So when I was growing up, I was a big fan of anything that was that was on the TV about science, whether it was the Curiosity Show or something else. But also I love my science fiction. I'm a Star Trek geek, Star Wars geek.
I don't call them geeks. I don't understand people who don't like Star Trek.
So I'm definitely on that bend. So that sort of gave me a passion for computing, because that was the thing that you see in those shows very strongly. And I grew up in the 70s and 80s. So in that sort of early 80s, mid-80s is when computers started to become a household item.
Yeah, right.
You know, they were starting to be introduced in the household, I should say, with your Commodore 64s as an example. So at that point in my life, I sort of I focused on learning about that and learning how to program computers. And at that time, within the curriculum, there was a nice connection between maths and computing at the time, which they use computers to compute a lot of solutions that can't be done by hand. I suppose the other part of that story is that ability to be able to totally focus on one area also gave me the capacity to ignore the racism I was experiencing at school.
Yeah, right. So you sort of just, it was almost just like it was your safety blanket, I guess.
It was my big sheller, right, you know. It was like a macadamia shell, really, as hard it was, to sort of protect me from all that stuff. But it isn't a good way of growing up because you become very, you don't develop those social skills as a kid growing up.
Yeah, right.
In a whole range of ways that I had to learn at quite an older age than I would have normally. It also gave me the capacity to do well at school and actually have a future view of life, a vision for myself, where I could go to university. And it was my ticket out of Toowoomba. It was my ticket into coming down here to study at university.
So did you go after school, went straight into university to study? What did you study and... what were the barriers, I guess, that you faced when you went to uni?
I wanted to study anything with computers and mathematics. There wasn't a course at that time, because this is about 88 is when I first started university.
Mm.
So at that time there was no course that was on that actually put the two together, so to speak. So I was basically just picking up any courses within the sciences where it's maths and computing. At that time, computing was more to do with information technology, which is more the databases and business end of things. And I wasn't really interested in that. I wanted to do the maths and science and the computing connection.
Yeah, right.
And I only got that opportunity when I actually did honours, which, yeah.
So when did you fall in love with mathematics?
I'd say in high school. I was actually really terrible in primary school. And I think the reason for that is that it's... was more rote learning, and also this idea that you had to have quick recall. So I remember one of my biggest memories as in primary school was I got caught cheating on my 2x table because it was about quick recall as she went through the 2x tables and you had to write them down really quickly.
Yeah, that's how I learnt as well.
I found that very stressful as a kid. So I, the way I was trying to deal with that is to cheat. So I think if that teacher knew that I did a PhD in applied mathematics, she'd probably fall for cheating.
Be interesting to go back and see what she would say.
Exactly. Yeah. So at that point I wasn't very good. But when I went into high school... my experience with algebra is the thing that actually clicked with me.
Right.
Everything fell into place when I started learning algebra. And I do sort of, retrospectively sort of think that it did give me that bigger view of mathematics, where a lot of the primary stuff is very focused on this very minute stuff.
Yeah.
And I think for our kids, I think maybe that's where we are not succeeding in too. We're not given the bigger picture. We're just told, do this because it's good for you.
Yeah.
And that's the language that they use.
I mean, growing up, were you one of... I think there's a drive on now to encourage Aboriginal students into STEAM subjects. But at the time when you were growing up, was it quite unusual, I guess, for a young black fellow to want to enter science and technology and sort of mathematic fields?
That's very true. I mean, there's... when I went to university... I was again the only black kid in school. I don't know if I said that before, but when I was through my high school and primary school, I was the only Aboriginal kid in the class, always. So when I went to university, I actually stayed at Yamba Hostel here in Hill End. So that was the first time I got together with a really strong group of Aboriginal people during my education.
Mm.
That's not part of my family. And I went with that group to university, but as soon as we got there, I was the only one walking off into the science classes. Because everyone was doing stuff like education, health, law, which is the stuff that is important. And,
well, I
and
guess they assume they're going
to
help their communities. I guess they don't assume, there's the assumption that science and maths isn't directly helping communities. I guess was that a sort of idea or maybe sort of that presumption?
I think that is very, very strong presumption. And that's the thing I had to deal with because I actually just followed my passion. I didn't think anything about, helping community necessarily at that point in my life because I was dealing with too much beforehand, I think.
Yeah, you wanted to get out, I guess.
I wanted to get out and do something that I wanted to do. So I had to go through that journey because I was meeting all these people who were saying these things. So I had to go through that journey. And at one point, I almost dropped out because I even said to the coordinator of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander unit at the time at Griffith University, the university I went to, I want to drop out because what's this going to do for our people? And she said, don't you dare.
This
is fundamentally important. And that sent me on a different pathway then.
So I guess at university, when you talk about how maths can help our people, were there any answers after that about where you could probably apply mathematics?
No, I think at that point, when I was talking to that coordinator, which is actually Debbie Bennett McLean, so thank you for you actually listening. I think the idea there is that we don't have these people in this area.
Yeah.
So let's just forge ahead and see what happens almost, I didn't really understand any sort of cultural connection with maths or science at that point in time.
Yeah, right.
There was a whole process from that point, even up to when I was doing my PhD, which is a long journey, when I started to actually really think about this cultural aspect.
Yeah, right. Mm. Did you want to describe a little bit about that cultural aspect and what it actually means? Because I was just thinking about an article I read a while ago, and it was when they wanted to put all Indigenous perspectives in the national curriculum. And it seems obvious in English and history and other subjects, but they also wanted to put it in the area of physics and mathematics. And I remember this article, Warren Mundeen saying, well, no, physics is a Western concept. You can't put Indigenous knowledges in physics and mathematics curriculum, like how would you do it? But you obviously see things very differently, don't you? That there are ways you can put those perspectives in teaching physics and maths and sciences.
Yeah, that's true. I have a very strong perception, different one to Warren Mundeen in that respect. Basically, I see mathematics as a different way of viewing the world, yeah? And it's not divorced from any other culture around the world, from what I perceive it. Maths is still part of a process where we consider the world around us and we go through an abstraction process to create these symbols to tell a story about that.
And those symbols are numbers most of the time.
They can be numbers, they can be Greek letters, they can be a whole range of symbols that we use. And the important thing there is that what we do is we actually attach meaning to those symbols by looking at the real world. They actually come from that, So when we observe that real world, we're actually introducing our cultural bias every time that we create something. And that's not a bad thing. That's right. Something that we do naturally. And in our communities, we have a lot of structures that we represent with our own symbolism.
Yeah, right. Yeah?
I'm actually, to give an example of that, I'm actually working with the Yirrkala community in Arnhem Land. They've had a process of trying to create Garama maths for since about 1989 or 1990, and the vision came from Dr. Yinapingu, who was the lead singer of the Yothi Indie band, where he wanted to see. He said that their mathematics is Gurutu, and that's the kingship for them up there.
Right.
And when you actually start delving into the kingship up there, that actually brings out all the structures of relationships. Yeah. So from those ideas of connecting people to themselves, to other people, to country and so forth, you actually build up a structure that in their language they call jalkri.
Right.
And that's not... And those structures and things are a mathematical idea as well, because that's what maths does. Maths looks for patterns and relationships and then understands the structures that sit underneath that.
Yeah.
So it's the exact same sort of thing, and that's why he was saying that, I believe. I know I never had the opportunity to meet him, but that's what I believe.
So would you say then that when you look at that example, that I guess Aboriginal, you know, before invasion and even after invasion, you know, when you look at the kinship system, so our lives were ruled by mathematics, I guess, but our own form of mathematics?
Yes, I would say that, definitely. Because that guru informs a whole range of things, you know, responsibility of land and you know, conservation ideas, whole marriage, everything, you know, everything's part of that. So that, in that sense, rules our lives through that connection. And there's a whole lot of maths within that, as I was saying before. Actually, one little quick story I'll tell you is I was actually with the... I did a presentation for the deans of maths faculties across universities in Australia, and one of the participants approached me about this idea of indigenising maths curriculum. And I showed him what I understand at this point in time. I'm not an expert, I should say, at Gurutu, and I'm nowhere near it. But I showed him what I understand at that point in time. And then once I finished drawing all the structures out for him, I said to him, there's no reason our kids should be 2 years behind in mathematics, is there?
No.
And he said, no, there's no reason they should be.
So coming from, it must be amazing because you're obviously an expert in mathematics in, you know, that Western sense where you've gone through university, you've learnt the Western system of mathematics. Is it, you know, when you look at it, that sort of form of mathematics over in Yirrkala, is it just as complicated, like,
oh, it's amazing.
Because I just think of maths ridiculously hard, you know, and I think a lot of people do that. Yeah. Is it like that level of complication?
It is hugely complicated, and it'd be really hard to actually translate that into what we would see as Western mathematics. It'd be really hard to do. I don't even think I'd even want to attempt it.
Yeah, right. So that's you coming as someone who has a PhD in mathematics.
Yeah.
You find that very complicated looking at it.
I find it very difficult. And also I'm only starting my journey and understanding it as well.
Yeah.
And there's some part of me that says it shouldn't need to be.
Yeah.
You know, but we still can draw a lot from it to actually inform how maths is taught for those kids up in Yirrkala.
Yeah, right.
Because they come to those schools with a lot of those structures already within their minds, you know. They all know straight away.
Because they've grown up in it.
They've grown up into it, yeah, yeah. And they know straight away how they're connected.
And
they have that stuff in their mind already. So the point is that we shouldn't treat our children as blank slates. They come with so much to the classroom that could be used.
Yeah.
And connected with, really. Not used, connected with. To actually show what Western maths offers.
Yeah.
And then from that bridging of those two worlds, which is the idea behind Gahurama, is to bring the two worlds together. Something else might actually grow from that.
So it's completely different, that worldview, from the way, I guess, Western societies view mathematics. Because to me it seems like, you know, most people can go through their whole lives and not even think about maths, or they don't want to think about it. Are our Western society's lives governed by mathematics in the same way, or is it sort of just, you know, I guess off in the distance, these sort of obscure concepts to us, whereas in Yirrkala it's obviously so essential to being?
It rules our lives and everyone's lives, but in a different way, I think. It's more sort of departmentalised into the field of science and mathematics. But within that field, being in a hierarchical model, they actually make decisions about all our lives.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it rules our lives.
It's like general relativity with the GPS and everything like that, and no one knows that they actually use general relativity. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to find where we're going. Isn't it a bit like that? It's just, I guess, it's not valued.
It's sort of hidden underneath in a sense, I suppose.
And no one wants to really learn about it. It's too boring.
No, but actually, when I do talks with people, with teachers in particular, I always get them to think about what maths is. And it's really interesting to go through the whole discussion. But one thing that really draws out of there, they actually recognise that everyone does mathematics.
Yeah.
You know, so I challenge them to think about what mathematics everyone does. And usually that's the stuff that we learn in primary school, which is, you know, how to handle money, cooking, timetables and things like that. And then I'm trying to make him think about there's a bigger world to mathematics, and but we're not really connecting with that.
Yeah, right.
And it becomes this other realm then of this scientist and expert that that allows us not to connect with in some respects.
Because you are very passionate in promoting maths, but a different way of teaching maths. Because I'm sure a lot of our listeners and myself included, I just thought I was naturally bad at maths, and I just didn't like it. It must have been the same for you when you're learning. You like rote learning and timetable, and I just wasn't very interested. And it's only now that I sort of see how amazing it is. So how can we be changing the way we teach mathematics so it's a lot more, I guess, accessible and, you know, a lot more easier for people to...
There's a whole range we can do it. I mean, I'll give you a couple of examples, I suppose, would be the best way. I mean, the first one that I did, I actually did this with Kargun Fogarty, Mudgety. He heard me talk about the ideas of the way to think about mathematics from a cultural point of view. And his first reaction was let's work together and we'll do it with Aboriginal dance.
Right.
So we had a group of Aboriginal kids in the Gold Coast as part of the Make It Count project, and they the idea behind that was that we split the kids up into groups and we gave each group a different mass expression. So it could be 7 - 2 is equal to 5, or 6 - 2 is equal to 12, or something like that. So the idea is that they had to look at those symbolism, and I had to talk to them about it, and we pulled them apart to say this is really a story just put together by these different symbols. So these symbols tell a story. And I basically told them that the numbers are the characters in the story, and the operation like plus and times and divide are their action. There's only really two actions where things come together and things move apart, but they just do it in different ways. And after that happens, there's a result or the end of the story.
Yeah, right.
So we went through that process. And these kids created stories and then had to perform it with dance. So Mudgety was also showing them how you can tell stories through dance, you know, with different rhythms and all that sort of stuff. I'm not an expert there, but...
So, it's the same sort of concepts but told differently, not from, like, just the, as you said, you put certain values on letters or numerals, but this is a different way. I mean, the dance moves, I guess, are sort of more the things you put value in.
Yeah, exactly. But also you bring it alive too. It's not just a number fact that you're learning. You actually bring it alive, and by bringing it alive, you can actually then translate that into other things. And the stories were fantastic. Like, for example, the subtraction story was the kids did this cloud that come over the country as they're dancing. And at some point, the rain rained over country, so a few people dropped off and the cloud kept on moving over.
So they told it through stories. So that's how they told a really mathematical story.
Yeah. Subtraction was, their idea was a cloud, you know, and it was really brilliant. It was really good.
You know what I find really interesting talking to you about it? Because you read biographies of famous mathematicians, and I'm just thinking of Albert Einstein, they visualize their concepts. What I mean? I think that's how he came through as a breakthrough with general relativity, is you can't travel faster than the speed of light. He was visualizing himself flying on a light beam. So is that very similar? Maybe the great mathematicians think similar to the way Blackfellas were thinking all along?
Yeah, I think people who really get onto these ideas actually have quite a strong creativity.
Yeah.
And actually I read somewhere else that most of the people who have actually made a significant advance in science and mathematics actually did things like played musical instruments or did artistic things as well. So they have a really strong creative aspect. But the maths we experience in the classroom is not creative at all. And that's one of the other aspects that I'm trying to bring to the maths classroom, is this idea of being creative. And that's where the dancing comes from. So we can actually allow kids to express themselves in the maths classroom like you would do in the English lesson or history or art lesson. So it's about, you know, and that helps them bring themselves to the classroom as well, to allow to express themselves. And I suppose in some ways that's my version of indigenising the curriculum, because you're allowing them to do that from their perspective as Aboriginal kids. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be about boomerangs or things like that. We are more than those sort of artefacts, you know. They're important to us, but then we are more than that. We have a lot of other things that we can offer. So allowing white teachers to engage in a creative pedagogy will actually get, which, and then allowing Aboriginal kids to express themselves in classroom, hopefully will bridge a gap between those two people, where the white teacher can might understand the kid a bit better, and value what they bring to the classroom.
Mm. Yeah, because, I mean, there's all this talk about high expectations for Aboriginal students, and I don't think it ever happens in reality, but I guess when they talk about that, it's almost just like a white Aboriginal student can sort of live up to the white expectations of a white student. You know what I mean? Where it's interesting that when you think of high expectations, you should also be dealing with the fact that we have to change the idea of learning and how we teach to kids. You know what I mean? If I'm saying that properly?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think you were talking to Irene Watson, weren't you, about the Colonial Project. I think in some respects we get caught up in that Colonial Project, and the future vision for a lot of people in maths and science is just to work for industry. And a lot of our people, I don't think, see that as a valid sort of career pathway necessarily. Like for yourself, for example, you got into radio for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
You know, and we got to find that for ourselves within the science and the maths area. What is that specific purpose that will engage us as Aboriginal people? Not mathematicians and industry people first, but as Aboriginal people first, you know, who are happy to do maths, you know, or science.
And what that means for us as a people. It just, because we always talk about cultural revitalization, and this to me seems to be a very important part of that, isn't it? If we could, but I guess you're one of the very few who are actually talking about it from a maths sense. Like, I haven't heard many other people talk about it, but it seems like a very important part of our revitalizing our culture and keeping that strong.
Yeah, because as I was trying to say a bit before too, if you even think about the language revivals and, you know, and keeping that alive and revitalised, we can do that within the maths classroom as well, because a lot of our language is connected with the maths. I've heard a lot of other academics say it's not, and there's sort of this deficit discourse goes on around languages, and our language is around mathematics. One of the classic ones is 1-2-3 Big Mob, which I don't think is totally 100% true. And I've actually heard other...
Could you explain what 1-2-3 Big Mob is? I haven't actually heard it before.
Well, they say that our language has only had the capacity to say in language 1-2-3 and then another word meaning bigger than 3, we're Big Mob.
So then after that, we can't deal with complicated mathematics or anything like that?
Well, yeah, so we don't have any understanding of big numbers. So how can we have mathematics that sits behind that if we don't have that number sense is the idea. But there was a paper written in the 1980s, you know, quite clearly demonstrated a whole range of different communities who could count in very high numbers, which was to debunk that idea, but people seem to still hold on to it. If there's even one academic trying to sell me that Aboriginal people don't have the language for comparing. And I said, because we don't have something that's equivalent to the est in the English language, which is almost mad. It's crazy.
Don't you love it when white academics try and explain your culture to you?
Yeah. And even though I hadn't had an experience with the language you're talking about or the people you're talking about, I just said to the person, you can't tell me that our mob can't understand something's bigger than small than something else. You know, there must be language. And she was getting a bit upset about me saying, no, I don't believe you. No, I don't believe you.
But, I mean, it really is phenomenal that they think that, because I think it explains their unconscious racism. Because you think of, we've been here for 60, 70, 80,000 years, and it's been a time of peace. Like, you look at white civilization. They could have been a lot further along if they hadn't been killing each other. You look at the history of science particularly, you know, just how, you know, look at Galileo, how he was sort of persecuted. I feel like they could have learned a lot more. And I think 60, 70,000 years, we had very complicated and complex and sophisticated knowledge that was built. And just because when white invaders came over, they couldn't see that because they had this idea of Aboriginal people as being savage and Stone Age. They couldn't actually see how complicated it was. It, when you look at it logically, it makes a lot of sense that we had really complicated knowledge systems.
Yeah, definitely. But also, I think one aspect there, just to sort of go on with that a bit, is that science was used against us as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing that we're still getting through. And I even know you interviewed Dave Lambert not long ago about genetics. And
he was on the show the other day. It was the best.
Yeah. But even that genetic stuff, that's dangerous stuff for us to think about, because there's a lot of things that we can lose or... from that, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and his story was quite a positive story, but the story just before that was actually say that we weren't the first peoples, you know. And this society will use science against us like that. So there's that fear. And even in when Australia was first colonized, we had to confront that Darwinian theories, you know, and that's how science was used against us then. And that's why we become the most primitive race on Earth, you know, because of those Darwinian ideas, their scientific knowledge telling them that we're primitive, or using it as a reason to say we're primitive.
When you talk about Darwin, I think you're exactly right. I think there seems to be hangovers and an unwillingness to believe science because of that. How do we start to break that down and promote, you know, the importance of science to Aboriginal people, but in our own way, not this sort of overpowering Western science?
I think we're coming to it in our own ways, particularly from our country programs, you know, it's like rangers and so forth. I mean, there's been a nice little intersection between the sciences and those sort of programs at this point in time. There have been heaps of examples, positive examples, where Aboriginal knowledges have connected with the scientific knowledges around management of plants, species and things like that. But I still think we're not there in terms of owning that, you know, owning that for ourselves, and actually understanding science enough from our perspective, like the whitefellow science, enough to be able to think, well, how can we negotiate this?
Yeah, right.
And I mean, it's happened on Stradbroke Island even. I mean, there was a computer model that was determining how much fresh water they could extract from the island from the mainland. And that affects our culture and community, because if you're extracting fresh water, you're affecting mangroves, you're affecting a whole range of things, and therefore trickling down to how we can hunt and gather or care for our country effectively. Yep.
So we have to have I guess this is getting back to why you were saying science is so important and careers in science is so important for a lot of Aboriginal kids, because it could actually have a really huge impact on so many other areas.
Yeah,
could it?
I think so. And care for country is one of those things that we should be strongly thinking about, you know, because we're still confronted with that whitefellow management of land, you know, yeah, mining and so forth as well. You know, so there's a whole interface there that we sort of need to get into. And we do it politically, but not from a scientific point of view. Yeah.
I guess it's very hard. Is it very hard for young blackfellas to get into the science fields? I can just imagine, you know, if you've had a lot of troubles in high school, are there many access pathways to begin trying to look at a career in science if they want to go on to further study?
I mean, there is the usual pathways that we have in university at this point in time, but the reason why I get into schools is because we have to improve it within schools.
Mm.
I mean, we're still a long way behind according to their stats of how we're performing in science and mathematics. Maths in particular is the thing, and maths is the gatekeeper for a lot of careers, unfortunately. Whether it is science and it can be for others as well, the economics, business. I was only talking to Aunty Mary Graham not long ago, and we couldn't think of one Aboriginal person who's doing economics, and I'm quite happy to be proven wrong. But you know, that's another sort of area that we should be delving into. You know, how money works on that global scale.
Yeah.
In terms of people getting in the door, we have to do more work in high schools and primary schools, but also we have those entry points into university, and we still are promoting more people doing sciences within universities.
It's interesting. I did see some statistics, and I don't have them before me today, but it was around people who graduate from higher education, and obviously, like, health and medical were way up there. Then you had the arts subjects and science and maths right down low, isn't it? So we've obviously got such a long way to go.
Also, I must say, there's actually a lot of good people out there.
Yeah.
I'm actually running STEM camps for the New South Wales, in partnership with the New South Wales ACG. And the Department of Education down there. I'm also the chair of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Mathematics Alliance, so we've got a little non-profit organisation that's promoting a better education for our kids. So I'm connected with through ATSMA with them. There's about five Aboriginal people with PhDs in mathematics across Australia.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you one of the first to get them?
People used to say that, but I actually wasn't. It's actually Professor Rowena Ball, I'd say, would be the first, because she's been a professor in maths for a very long time at ANU.
Wow.
And she's actually studies a whole lot of interesting stuff through mathematical modelling. One of the things he's actually doing is looking at the origin of life through mathematical modelling.
Wow.
Back to the primordial soup type stuff, you know.
Holy, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
How do they start? I mean, that's not your area of expertise, but how do they even, like, it just amazes me that they can get so far back. The thing that amazes me, particularly around, you know, the fact they can chart the universe back to 13 billion years, like, that's just phenomenal to me that we've been able to do that, isn't it?
It is phenomenal, but you asked the wrong person. Wrong in that area. Maybe we should bring Rowena on.
You're talking a bit about your lines. Did you want to tell me a little bit more about that and what your future projects are and what you're hoping to do with that?
Through the camps?
Yeah, your alliance. Yeah, and your camps
alliance.
And everything.
Yeah, so we're doing three camps this year in New South Wales. We did one last year and we got 130 kids coming in and they travelled for hours to come in. And the success was so good they want to do three across the state. Part of that camp is we have also Jason Sharples, who's an Aboriginal academic in maths, and he does the mathematical modelling of fire. So we have kids, not the kids doing it, but we light fires and look at different patterns get to relate that to mathematics. So the STEM camp is really good in terms of engaging the kids' minds around creativity and also the fact that Aboriginal people do this and why they do that. And we also try and make the camps an Aboriginal celebration around that as well. So
yeah,
we have
right.
elders at the start and they're welcomed into the country and all that. So that process is all there to be part of an Aboriginal thing. So it's not just white fellas and lab coats anymore.
Yeah, right.
So that's one of the big ticks there. But the thing that we need to do is follow through with that, and we're still working on that process to get into the classrooms a bit more. The other things that we're doing, at the end of the year, we're going to have a conference in Wollongong. So I was working with the Yuan mob down in Wollongong, and they were keen to have the conference there. So if you are interested in the space, please come down there. We are looking for people to present. So if you're a blackfellow teacher out there who teaches our kids and has some really good ideas around teaching our kids in mathematics, we really wanted you to come down. The theme is going to be quality teaching and learning in mathematics education. And the sort of byline is value us, value our education, value our future. I think from our talk today, you see why we put all the valuing in there.
Yeah.
So please come if you want to come down for that. The other parts of what we're doing for ATSIMA is that we are I am working with the Yirrkala mob, as I said before. That's part of the ATSIMA projects. And we have a range of research projects with different universities as well. So our website, can I say website?
Yeah, definitely, and we'll put it up on the web too for our people.
It is www.atsima, which is ATSIMA.com. So go to the website and have a sticky beak around. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I just wanted to also ask, when you talk about the Yirrkala mob, obviously so much of our knowledge has sort of been, you know, unfortunately, you know, a lot of destroyed and a lot has been lost since invasion. Are there other parts in the country you think that might have sort of knowledge that we're able to continue to revitalise and learn from?
Oh, look, I think there's a whole range of things happening around across the country. I mean, you had Bob Fuller in here talking about astronomy, you know, and he's going to different communities around New South Wales doing that. Part of the, even the STEM camps I was talking about, we actually have Aboriginal people coming in to do what we sort of call cultural stuff, but it's our stuff with the kids as well, alongside what we're doing with the academic stuff as well, which is all academic stuff really. So there's a whole range of things that we can connect with mathematics, and it doesn't have to, you know. I think we're in a process too that we have to define ourselves again, because a lot of the times we fall in these categories of remote, rural, and urban, and that defines us when it shouldn't. It does not define us. We have a whole range of experiences, histories, and experiences that define us who we are at this point in time, and we have to embrace that. But I must admit, actually, working with the Yirrkala mob, I also see a lot more of our community too.
Mm.
You know, and one thing that always surprised me, and I haven't been to an Aboriginal community yet which I don't feel familiar or at home in some form. You know, there's something very familiar about all of our mobs when we go and work with them. And that there there's enough for me to say that we have plenty to offer.
That's a really beautiful way to describe it. I guess the last question is, and for a lot of our listeners, it seems that, you know, I think there's this perception that Aboriginal people have to learn from white society all the time, but it seems that when you're talking about this method of learning, you know, a lot of white kids can learn that way too and would actually thrive by learning the Aboriginal way, wouldn't it be? I think they have to start realising that we have something really precious and important to offer.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fundamentally important. I mean, if we're going to have any sort of true future in Australia, we need to have all kids understanding who we are as Aboriginal people. We've been through a process of denying who we are through terra nullius, you know, land belonging to nobody, and that set us on a pathway that we still haven't reconciled, as you saw. Everyone saw the stuff when the university put invade, you know, there was a big uproar just because of using the word invaded.
Isn't that sad that we're debating that? I mean, how do you expect Australia to come to terms with these really amazing concepts you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I'm working with community and mob first. To tell you the truth.
That's actually very true, isn't it? I guess I'll just ask you the last question is, when we're looking more broadly at Aboriginal affairs, we're talking about the future treaty. Do you think we should be looking down that road, or do you have an opinion on that, or where do you think we should be going in relation to that?
I haven't really engaged too much intellectually around treaty and constitutional recognition. I do understand that constitutional recognition is just a bit like a editing process, where what's that really going to offer us in the future? Treaties, that's something that I suppose would be the ultimate step, really, in actually having some sort of proper relationship and actually seeing us as a sovereign people. But, you know, across the world, treaties haven't been treated. So there's always that problem, but it's always in the back of my mind.
Yeah, and yeah. I guess to finish on maybe a more optimistic, lighthearted note, you said you were really a big fan of Star Trek. Would you like to see a black version of Star Trek one day?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Actually, going into that sort of realm too, I really, really enjoyed the black comedy algebra. My algebras. So to all my algebras out there, thanks for listening.
That's a great way to end it. Thank you so much for coming into the studio today. And we'll put all our details up about Dr. Chris Matthews Alliance. It's the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Mathematics Alliance, ATSMA, and also they're having their conference down in Wollongong later this year. So you'll also be able to find the details of that later. But hopefully we can get you on again to talk maths. It's not a boring conversation. So thank you.